Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this new podcast. It's an inaugural one. It's the first in a series where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out just that little bit more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. And I'm delighted to welcome as my very first guest, Elaine Appleby, who's been appointed as the new Bradford District and Craven Health and Care Partnership Independent Chair. Elaine, did you ever think you would be making a podcast? I certainly didn't think that I would find myself interviewing such esteemed guests on a podcast.
No, I listen to them a lot when I'm walking, but I never thought I'd be making one or part of one. No, delighted. Now I can find out how they do it.
That's great, isn't it? Well, apparently what we have to do is talk to each other and have a really interesting conversation. Now, in the relatively short time that I've known you, and I'm expecting you might say the same of me, I think we're quite good at talking.
Well, I did say to Mark, who's helping us make the podcast, that probably content wouldn't be a problem.
So, Elaine, I am delighted to welcome you. And we're going to find out much more about the partnership and your role a little later. But first, I want to find out a little bit more about you. So tell me, who is Elaine Appleby?
Well, I'm a Lancastrian. Let me start there, boldly in Yorkshire. But I arrived in Bradford, and it'll be 50 years ago in September, as a fresher at the University of Bradford. And I came to study as a social worker. Right now, in my 60s, my family is hugely important. So I'm a granny. So I guess I take that as my top job now. I've lived in Keighley a lot of that time, and now I've moved over into Craven and live in Sutton. So there's something about the geography of the place. So as a person, where I live matters enormously. And Bradford and Craven has just been a real magnet and a real place to root and grow. And once you get here, I think it's very hard to leave. And 50 years later, here I am.
I've moved over here when I became chief exec of this trust. And up to that point, I'd known very little about Bradford, I have to say. I will admit to that. Other than infrequently, I guess, visits to the Alhambra to see the pantomime and various other things. And that was a bit of a treat because I'm from Barnsley originally. But I have really thrown myself into being an honorary Bradfordian now, living and working in Bradford. And I think as far as the partnership goes, it's a great yin and yang, isn't it, that myself as a sort of place-based lead and you as the independent chair have got real roots, real
yes,
genuine roots in each of the parts of the district that is the focus of our partnership.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, I think that's one of the things that really comes at you powerfully when you first move here is just how much the identity of the people is the place and its geography.
So do you see your role as chair as kind of a natural corollary to your, because it's very evident, isn't it? You are a person who is interested in people. You know, your background working in social care in some of the most challenged places in and around Bradford will give you some incredibly valuable insights, won't they, into the experiences of the people for whom we're trying to change services and to make things better.
Yes, I started my working life as a social worker at Linfield Mount Hospital, which I loved. I loved working with other disciplines, working with the doctors and the nursing staff and the OTs and the physios. And it was really, I loved that atmosphere of the hospital, but actually left quite quickly because what I understood from the people that I was, who were my clients, was that a lot of the mental health distress they were suffering was actually to do with the circumstances in which they were living. It was the poverty, it was the unemployment, it was things like that that was causing depression and anxiety, things that nowadays we would recognise much more easily, we speak about it much more openly, but in those days often necessitated a hospital admission in a way that today that wouldn't be the case. And so within a very short period of time, I thought, hang on a minute, is this the best use of my time in order to be serving people and supporting people? Or should I try and do a kind of different job here and try and do something about those circumstances? And so I moved after about 15 months, I think it was, I moved to work on Homewood Estate. And there, two social workers, me and a senior social worker, were asked to go onto the estate and support parents, because there was a lot of distressed families at that time on Homewood where children were coming into care, or some of them even, you know, ending up on the abuse register. And so we went onto the estate and the senior social worker said to me, he said, we are going to listen to people. We are going to find out what they think would help them be even better parents, and we're going to support them put those ideas into practice. And that was such a powerful and different approach, and it still is today. I think they call it now asset-based community development, but in those days we just took that as an approach. And then we listened to the frontline workers, the midwives and the health visitors and the school staff, and we brought people together in what was then a new way of working, and it's now become, is called partnership working. And just following people's ideas and supporting them put those ideas into practice had a really profound and powerful effect on everybody. And really that set the next 30 years of my working life. So yes, people for definite. And that it's not acceptable for people to be living in circumstances which cause high levels of distress for them and their families.
It's a really good segue into talking a little bit more about our partnership. You've already mentioned, and it's a fact, isn't it? Bradford District and Craven is a huge geographical area. It has such a wealth of diversity in both its geographical makeup but its social circumstances. And we're serving collectively a population of about 650,000 people. And as health and care partners, if you think about the assets that we have, as well as clearly lots of buildings, the things that make a difference are the people who work in health and care. And there are about 33,000 people across our district who have some role to play in contributing to the health and well-being of the people of Bradford District and Craven. And that's just those who are in paid employment. So if you think about the voluntary sector and the community sector organisations and groups, you can add at least another 5,000 into that. And I think we've got a very simple aspiration to keep people happy, healthy and at home. What does that mean to you, Elaine?
I think it's going back to those days of seeing what was almost the opposite, unhappy, unhealthy at home.
Or in hospital, or in an institution, or whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Where do we feel most safe and secure, or we would hope to feel most safe and secure, is at home. And we know that isn't the case for everybody, but that would be the hope of many of us, I think. I remember talking with some teenagers on Ravenscliff Estate back in the 90s, and I was asking them what was it that they hoped for their futures, and it was heartbreakingly simple. They wanted a home to live in, they wanted a job to go to, and they wanted a family. And where did I start? I started with being a granny. You know, that there's something so fundamental to us as human beings that that's our core space. And from that, if we're safe and happy and healthy at home, actually that's when we're giving out to other people. That's when generosity is born. When each of us is at our most safest, that's when we can be at our most generous. So to make a good quality community, that sits for me as the bedrock.
Mm. They say, don't they, it takes a village to raise a child.
Absolutely.
And I think we have a very, very specific focus in the work that we do as a partnership now. And that's about making resilient communities, self-sufficient communities, communities that enhance that feeling of safety and security. Because there are people who may well feel secure in their home, but their immediate environment,
yes,
may not be as safe and secure to them. And it may not be as conducive as we would like it to be. And so a big focus of our work in communities is about empowering those communities. And I'm struck by your stories about Homewood probably, what, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, I'm afraid to say 40.
Okay, so 40 years ago, and yet we're having the same conversations, the same types of conversations 40 years on. Which makes me think this is a job that's never really done, is it, in its entirety?
It's
a bit like the Forth Bridge, painting the Forth Bridge.
It is, and I had to go to Homewood to a meeting. And I rang up the venue, and there on the phone was one of those young mums from 40 years ago. That's a resilient community.
Yeah.
And not only was she there, active in her community all those years on from that original work, she was giving me news of other people. Anything we can do as the partnership to support that sort of resilience is going to be key, and will leave a legacy long after we've departed.
So do you see one of the key things that we need to concentrate our efforts in is empowering and skilling the people who live in those communities? I don't think it's our role as a partnership to impose our version of what we think is the right solution to the problems that we perceive in the way that we perceive them.
Oh, spot on. I mean, we just get it wrong and have done. You know, that's the truth. That the people who know are the people who live there. They don't know everything, and that's the power of partnership at that very local level as well. So when I describe that on Homewood, where we went and listened to people's ideas, at the same time, we helped the community to hear the ideas from health visitors and midwives and other people. So together at that neighbourhood level, they all put their ideas together because there's stuff the professionals know that the community don't know, and there's absolutely stuff the professionals don't know that the community really do know. And the powerhouse for change there was actually that partnership working. One of the things I've been involved with in past years is making an offer to local people who do know, who've got a good idea. They're not part of a voluntary organisation. They might not even be part of a community organisation, but actually they're prepared to act, only nobody's ever asked them. And so we introduced a way of involving communities in decision-making about grants, and offered grants to people with a good idea. Small amounts of money, but £500 to the right person with a good idea to help them get that idea out and about and gather other people around it can make a massive difference.
I think the other thing around our partnership that is just as important as the work that we will do in and with our communities is how we interact as independent organisations within that partnership, so that less and less you see the joins between the organisation. But have you got any insights around what good integrated care might look like?
I've actually just a little bit of lived experience. Before my friend's husband died, they were both in need of care. And there was the crazy situation of two sets of carers coming into the same house. And everybody in the room acknowledged the craziness of this. So that was like the one side of the same story. And then her dear husband died. And one night she got very ill in the middle of the night, and she'd signed up to the local authority adult social care pendant scheme. So in the morning, really not able to get out of bed, she pressed the pendant. In came the carers. They got the phone to her to ring me. They stayed till I turned up. They'd rung 111. 111 sent an ambulance. The paramedics came in and did a full assessment and said, don't think hospital's the best place here. And you're really poorly. What do you think? She said, I agree. They said to me, what do you think? So even I was included in the partnership. I agree. And so they said, we can call in the team from Airedale. So they were able to refer there and then. She needed some aids. She needed proper continuing support. The collaborative care team turned up an hour later. And what was so fantastic about that was this was all happening in her bedroom. That a set of workers from three different bits of the system were able to speak to each other off their own assessment, and she was left happy, not quite so healthy, but at home. And I was about to move in. I was going to say, right, I'll move in. You can't stay. But because of the collaborative care team, they said, no worries. Here's the phone number. We're going to come in three times, and we'll even come in the night if that's necessary. She felt safe. I felt great. And I just thought, oh, wow, this is what Actors One Bradford District
that's great, isn't it?
And
that's
Craven
a really good
means.
Story. Yeah. When we get it right, it's fantastic. And I think what we're committed to do as partners is to not make that the exception.
Absolutely.
Make
absolutely.
That the So we have to be realistic, don't we, in Bradford. Ill health and poor experiences fall disproportionately on some rather than others.
I think one of the things that COVID showed, and I think that partners have learned so much from, was the value and, well, the necessity in that point. There were communities where COVID was killing more people. I mean, it was as when it comes down to life and death, it just becomes very clear, doesn't it? It didn't mean that places that I live in or Ilkley didn't get their vaccinations, didn't get the care they needed. Nobody lost out on that care. And there were targeted interventions to try and address that imbalance. If we know where diabetes, for instance, is more prevalent across our partnership area, and we want to put more work into that, well, people with diabetes are there in the system. I was involved in some work with exploring with one community with a high prevalence of diabetes, how people might be encouraged to go and get the retinopathy screening. And actually, blindness is a real worry with diabetes if you do not screen eyes. And so the RNIB sponsored a research project, and that was about going and listening to the communities. How did people understand what was being offered through screening services? And one of the things that we discovered was that people didn't know they could go blind. And when I was talking to a clinician about this, he said, actually, that's fair. What we tend to say is you'll have trouble with your eyes because none of us like to say you could go blind. And so the community message was tell us the truth. And so we developed some interventions that weren't taking anything away from anybody else, but were meaning more people took up retinopathy screening, and therefore in the end we're going to cost the NHS less.
I think the issue that we wrestle with, and you've probably said it much more clearly than I did, which is there is a universal offer, but to enable some people across our communities to access that offer and to participate in taking up that offer, we have to put more resources into those communities to help them understand the offer, help them even to get to the offer. or take the offer to them. The example you gave is a great one. Everybody who was eligible to receive a vaccine could get to a vaccine, but there are certain things in some of our communities that make it more difficult for those individuals to take up the offer. We have to try harder to make what is a universal offer truly universal.
Yes, absolutely. I just suppose that's the whole discussion that goes on around equality. Equality doesn't mean offering the same thing to everybody, because some people are more unequal than others. And I think that's where I think that's why the partnership's emphasis on communities is really important. Maximising what people can do for themselves, and that communities can help each other do for themselves. So, for instance, the messaging on diabetes, in the end, the intervention was to get 5 simple messages. We linked it with something that was important to that community as a story, which made sense to people. And then they took these 5 key messages into their families. It wasn't requiring any professionals to do anything. The professionals and communities worked together to say what these 5 key messages were. And I think that's one way in which that community action can make a real difference in that universal provision and increasing uptake for that. That's why they're such an important partner, just as families are and just as expert patients are. You know, if we draw on people's ability to learn, to know, and to be part of the kind of clinical team, I suppose, in a way.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we have a huge population of patients in Bradford who suffer from renal problems. And just this week, I was really fortunate because I got invited to the opening of our home care hub. And this is our part of our renal services, where patients learn how to, if they want to, have their own treatment, their own dialysis at home. And that's life-changing. And we heard from a patient called Izzy who had done that. And he had a young family, and what he was saying was, what was really important to me was that I took control of this thing. Clearly the first line of treatment that we would wish any renal patient, if they're able to, is a transplant, which would be great. Izzy had a transplant, and actually, unfortunately, it didn't quite work out the way we would have liked it to, and he finds himself still having to receive dialysis. But if you think about someone who has to schedule their lives around attending renal dialysis 3 or 4 times a week for up to 4 hours, it's really hard to fit life in around that. What Izzy said was learning how to do it at home and have the equipment, the confidence, and knowing that there is a backup there in the shape of the renal team meant that he could choose to do it at a time that was more convenient for him, so that he could fit his treatment into his life as opposed to his life around his treatment. And that's a fantastic example, I think, of the kinds of things we want to do more of to help people have healthy, happy lives at home. So, Elaine, we have come to the end of our time. Didn't that fly?
It did. Yeah. It did. Thank you, Mel.
It did. No, not at all. Thank you for being our very first guest. And I hope people have enjoyed listening to Elaine. And if you would like to know a little bit more about our Act as One Health and Care Partnership and all the work that we're doing across Bradford District and Craven, then Google us. You will find us, Act as One Bradford. And please do join us next time.